So then in 1965, he becomes a broadcaster with ABC. It's interesting. He was just a natural at that as well, wasn't he?
Well, he was. He was such a great communicator, first of all, and I think the average football fan knows and understands football, but a lot of other people tune in and they really don't know all the basic details of the game. I think he was able to put technical football terminology into layman's language so that anybody, whether you're a male or a female or you're a grandparent or you're in grade school, you could gain perhaps a little bit better, easy understanding of what was going on.
Right. But then his mannerism, his looks and all that, it was just, he was made for TV from the very beginning. As a matter of fact, I do believe that he was the first coach to have a coach's program called the Bud Wilkinson Show.
Yeah, he was very innovative and very creative, and he's very natural in a television studio. He always felt very comfortable with the camera, and he used to tell me, you just look at the camera and you think that's your best friend. You're just sitting there talking to them. I remember the challenges that some of the producers, people like Chuck Howard, who were responsible at that time for the ABC sports, and Chuck told me he had a difficult time having Dad be critical of a player or a coach, and that wasn't my dad's tendency. He had a real hard time doing that, so he might be calling in on Bud's earphone saying, go ahead and tell him this guy did a dumb thing, and Bud would say it a little bit more tactfully.
And who were the play-by-play and his mates there at the time?
He was probably most known working with Chris Schenkel. He worked with Chris, and then he worked with Jim Simpson for a number of years. He worked with Keith Jackson for a number of years and Bill Fleming. So he worked with the top guys in that industry.
Yeah. Inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
So then time goes on, and he gets back into coaching again.
That was unusual because he had been offered many, many jobs. And I remember when people like Lamar Hunt and other owners would come into our home trying to encourage my dad to leave college sports for the NFL game. And he never wanted to do that. But circumstances were different at this time. My mom and dad had gone through a divorce. The company that my dad was involved in was in some ways stymied by some government regulations and decisions that were made during the Jimmy Carter administration. And Billy Bidwell, the owner, unexpectedly reached out to Dad. It was, I think, a confluence of circumstances in his life that changed his normal way of looking at things. He thought it would be a fun thing to do, and he really did enjoy it. Even though he only lasted a year and a half, he was terminated by Bidwell because Bidwell chose to direct that Dad should be playing a quarterback instead of the starting quarterback that Dad was putting in the game. And my dad felt philosophically that was his responsibility. So in principle, he didn't do it, and he was fired by Bill Bidwell.
Bill Bidwell was the owner, of course, of the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes.
And then the record was 9 wins and 20 losses, so that had to be tough for him. How did he view his overall experience working with professional players?
Well, he really liked it. I think they would give him high marks, Dan Dierdorf, Jimmy Hart, and others. He had great rapport and great respect with these players. They were not as talented and gifted, but they still played pretty darn well when you go back and look at some of the close games. My belief is that under normal circumstances in the professional league, it takes time to build a team. I think Dad, had he stayed, he absolutely would have won, but because of the series of circumstances that we just addressed, I'm not sure that he had the time horizon to make it happen, but he really enjoyed it. He always believed that as long as he was doing his very best, which he did, then he felt very comfortable. And I think those of us in the family, as we've talked about, he was a very competitive person, but he seemed to handle it better than we did.
He stayed on and lived in St. Louis then,
didn't he? He did, yes. He was very much accepted into the greater St. Louis community. They treated him with great respect. He enjoyed living there the latter stages of his life.
Was he in business after the Cardinals in St. Louis?
He actually was not. By that time, he was pretty much retired, although he did remain in the speaking industry, giving speeches throughout the country. Then he also headed up the U.S. Gymnast Federation, and so he was involved in a number of things, representing a number of the United States presidents on various boards and commissions.
And then he died in 1994.
Yes, he did.
He was 77 years old. That was in St. Louis. What was it that brought him to his death?
Well, he had a congestive heart problem, and he had that probably 8 years before he died. My brother Pat, who is a physician, did say that that's about the normal life expectancy once you develop a congestive heart problem. Toward the very end, his last 2 years, he began to suffer a series of minor strokes. That was very difficult for us because he lost most of his eyesight. He was not probably legally blind, but he couldn't see well. He couldn't read. He was an avid reader. So it was obviously challenging to see this deeply healthy, robust, handsome, energetic person have to go through the malady of aging. But he handled it like he did everything else, very gracefully, never complained. To the very end, he remained the same person he always was in life.
You were there with him to the end?
Yes, I was. My brother Pat and I both came up. I was there during the latter years frequently, but during the last couple of weeks of his life, we both were up there, and I remember going home maybe for 5 days before he died just to try to get a little rest, and my brother Pat had left a day or two before, and he told me he didn't think we'd see our dad alive again. And then I did go up probably the 2 days that he was living and just spent time with him and was with him when he passed. I remember I just had a lot of feelings racing through my mind just watching him. The dying process in that instance, in many respects, is very peaceful because you just start breathing a little bit slower and slower and slower, and then you just stop. And, of course, I was just, thinking of all the wonderful things.
Yeah. And, you know, as we look at it, this day and age, 77 is young.
Oh, very young, yeah. Again, the fact that he was so healthy and robust, and I think the genes in the family. His dad actually died when he was 73 of cancer. I'm not sure which type, but Dad really took very seriously the importance of physical education, keeping himself alert, sharp, both physically and mentally and spiritually. So, yes, it was way too young for him to die, in the late 70s. That's too young.